We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Well, certainly we can expect that in the years to come, we will be hearing a lot about Brazil as a result of the selection of the country to host the 2016 Summer Olympics. That is just one indication of the country's rising influence in the world, and certainly it is now arguably the most important country politically and economically in South America. The president of the country, Mr. Lula da Silva, when the announcement was made that the country had won the Olympics, he said they had now gone from a second-class country to a first-class country. He said, finally, Brazil receives the respect it deserves. This morning in this part of the show, we'll be talking a bit about Brazil's emergence as an important country, not just in Latin America, but also in the world. And we have here with us two guests, Werner Baer and Joe La. Werner Baer is a professor of economics here at the University of Illinois. He's a specialist in the economics of Latin America. And Joe Love is the interim director of the Le Monde Center for Brazilian Studies here at the University of Illinois, something that is just starting. It's brand new, and we'll be talking about that. Their first big event will be taking place next week. Joe is also emeritus professor of history here at the University of Illinois. And as we talk, questions, comments certainly are welcome. The number here on in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers people can call with questions. We just ask people to please be brief so we can accommodate as many callers as possible and keep moving. But questions are certainly welcome. Well, thank you both very much for being here. I guess we could start talking a little bit about the this now Institute for Brazilian Studies that's now officially, I guess, your first big event, your inaugural event is taking place on the campus next week. Are there many other such centers in the United States?
In the United States, well, there this center at Harvard University, which also got some financing from Mr. Lehman. There's also a sort of a center at Stanford.
Yeah.
Joe, what do you think? Can you think of others?
Yeah, there's one at Texas, one at UCLA. But all of these competitors are far less well-funded than we are, with a single exception of Harvard. Mm-hmm. There are two players on the field, basically, the University of Illinois and Harvard, as far as the level of funding we have received, and that is $14 million from the donor, Jorge Paulo Lehman. So that money is going to be used for a variety of purposes. It'll be for teaching across a broad field of disciplines. It'll be for hiring new positions, establishing a chair on Brazilian history, new position in Portuguese, a rotating chair for distinguished Brazilian scholars to be in residence here at Illinois, fellowships and scholarships for both undergraduates and graduates, for Brazilians and non-Brazilians. Undergraduate students at the University of Illinois who want to study in Brazil will now, if they merit the support, they'll receive support from us in this new organization. So we're going to be doing a lot of different things, and beyond that, cultural events we will sponsor in cooperation with the Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies.
It's my understanding that this is the largest single gift by an individual who is not a graduate of the University of Illinois.
Correct.
Why did Mr. Lehman decide he was going to give us this $14 million?
Well, this is a long story. I've known Lehman since we were both students. It's a long-standing friendship, and he's followed along what I've been doing and what Joe's been doing for quite a number of years. He supported his support for the University of Illinois dates back quite a few years. His first gift was an endowment to finance scholarships for Brazilian students who study in the economics department and as a graduate student. Then he endowed the chair, which I now occupy, and I use the income of that chair to finance the trips of our students to Brazil to get to know it better, and also to bring Brazilian visiting scholars here for a month. He also then, Joe and I, got a gift, was it about 10 years ago, Joe?
From, yeah, 1999.
Nine, from the Hewlett Foundation to develop programs between the University of Illinois and Brazilian universities. This has resulted in exchange of scholars, has resulted in a number of conferences and subsequent publication of books, which has been very successful. Hewlett Foundation renewed its grant, but when that was running out and the program of the Hewlett Foundation came to an end, definite end, Lehmann thought our program was worthwhile continuing to support, and he made a gift, not an endowment gift, but a gift which would last about 6 years a few years ago.
In that situation, the University of Illinois went in to this cooperative agreement. Chancellor Herman committed a certain amount of money to jointly sponsor the program, and that, I think, gave Lehmann the faith that this university was serious about Brazilian studies, and I think that increased his willingness and eagerness to make this endowment.
But the whole thing came to fruition 2 years ago when the Chancellor Herman visited China, was preparing for it. We decided, why doesn't he visit Brazil? And we persuaded him, and he came down with a group of people from the University of Illinois, which included Bob Easter, who was dean of ACES at that time. And we made an exchange agreement, signed an exchange agreement with the University of São Paulo, which is probably the leading university in Brazil. Incidentally, this was quite interesting because in the inter-American system, the state of São Paulo and the state of Illinois are sister states. During that 1 week visit, Mr. Lehmann was instrumental in arranging a number of events, and he became quite taken with what we told him about the University of Illinois, and especially the description of our university by Herman. And at the end, he told Herman, "Look, I'd be interested in helping out the university as long as it has something to do with Brazil." And then Chancellor Herman asked us to form a committee and make a proposal, which resulted ultimately in a $14 million proposal and a $14 million endowment.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit later on, we can talk about some of the things that will be going on next week. Let me just go to talk specifically about Brazil and take the thing that's now the most recent event and hope that that's not too small a thing to start with, and that is the selection of Brazil to host the Olympics in 2016, something that no doubt will result in even greater attention focused on Brazil than would have otherwise. What – and I think that as I have read, there seemed to be a great deal of sympathy among the members of the Olympic Committee for having an Olympics in Latin America, because there never had –
In South America.
I mean, in South America, the stress, but there had been in Central America, in Mexico. Mexico City. And to have an Olympics in South America. So that no doubt would have worked in favor of this bid. But was there, you know, something in particular, do you think, about Brazil or about the proposals that it made or the way that it made its pitch that really helped in the selection of Brazil?
Well, as in the case of the United States, the president of Brazil came to the Olympic Committee and made a plea on behalf of his country. He is golden in Brazil right now politically for the reason that 2 years before that, Brazil is going to host the World Cup.
Yeah, right.
So in 2014, World Cup, 2016, the Olympics. And one thing that distinguished Brazil from the other three competitors in that final selection was not that the head of state came, because Obama came and the prime minister of Japan as well as Sarkozy of France. King Carlos of – Juan Carlos of Spain. So what distinguished Brazil was the fact that it had never had Olympic Games before. The United States has had Olympic Games on its territory 8 times in all, that is to say 4 times for the Summer Olympics and 4 times for the Winter Olympics. So the United States far and away is the country with the largest number of Olympic Games on its national territory.
Yeah. But let me also mention that 2 years ago, Rio hosted the Pan American Games, and they were extremely successful. They built a number of excellent venues. In spite of the reputation of Rio as having a high crime rate, there was no increase in crime rate. It was a very disciplined affair, and that made quite a big impression on the Olympic Committee. Yeah.
I mentioned some of the remarks that the president, Mr. Lula da Silva, made, very emotional, and that's kind of the guy he is, where he said, we've now have gone from being a second rate to a first rate country, and something effective. Now, finally, we're going to get the kind of respect we deserve. And I wonder what you make of that, and whether in fact to this point Brazil has not gotten the respect that it deserved.
Oh, I think Brazil has already reached a respect. I mean, there's the famous expression, the BRICS, which was invented by Goldman Sachs, which includes India and China and Russia and Brazil as the emerging countries that have to be taken into account. So I think the remarks by Lula were a little bit patriotic gore, you might say. But on the other hand, I mean, Brazil has grown. Brazil is a country whose population will reach 200 million. It's nothing compared to China and India, but it has a huge diversified manufacturing establishment. It not only exports soybeans and iron ore, but it's an exporter of manufactured products. It's the fourth largest producer of airplanes. The planes that service Champaign-Urbana are all Brazilian-made. So you can say that Brazil, to be taken seriously, all you have to do is to look at what it has achieved economically in the past, and also the fact that it has restored democracy after 1985, when the military stepped down. And there's been a whole series of successions. Some presidents were more competent than others, but it is a democracy and a functioning democracy, and certainly an example to many of the other countries in Latin America, some of which have shaky democracies.
One example of this is the fact that the president elected in 1989, Fernando Collor, was impeached by Congress and had to leave office. So they survived that early in the new era of democracy. And since then, they've elected two presidents, each serving 2 4-year terms. And these presidents were from contrasting parties. Not all the listeners may know that Lula is one of the few members of the working class who's actually come to the top position in the country. The president of Brazil, unlike any other Latin American country or any other country in the world right now that I know of, comes from a working class background and was made his career as a union leader.
Yeah, right. I know that there has been within Brazil has perhaps been some controversy about the Olympic bid in the sense that it's going to be very expensive, and they already spent a great deal of money just making the bid. And I think that there are some people in Brazil have said, look, we have some serious problems here. We still have a very high levels of poverty, and that perhaps rather than spending money on having this Olympics, we ought to take whatever that's going to cost and put that into the social service infrastructure of the country. Was there, in fact, much opposition or criticism in Brazil of the Olympic bid?
No, not really. You hear some of these voices. You heard the same thing when they decided to move the capital to Brasilia. Mm-hmm. You know, it was quite a feat, you know, in 4 years in the interior of Brazil to establish a capital, which is a well-working enterprise. Some people said, well, shouldn't we have first solved the problem of poverty? But you can argue about that, but it seems – but you have to take a look at what's been happening in Brazil. For example, they have a program of transfer to the poor called Bolsa Família, scholarships for the family, in which if you're below a certain level of income, you get a regular transfer, the equivalent of $50 or $60 a month. That was started, actually, by the previous president, but most of the credit now has gone to Lula. Mm-hmm. And that had, in some ways, contributed to improve, let's say, the lot of the poor. So it seems to me that quite a number of social expenditures are being made, not necessarily efficiently, that's another question, but the goodwill is there. But on the whole, most groups are quite proud of the fact that Rio has been chosen. This will have a since it was going to be preceded by the World Cup, the Soccer World Cup. That means the expenditures on tourism, the expenditures on venues, and the jobs it creates are going to be felt all over Brazil. And certainly on the Olympics, the impact of the Olympics will be felt mainly by the city of Rio, which is the second largest city of Brazil.
Yeah,
I wanted to just add that it is true historically that the direct costs of the holding the Olympics has been a money-losing proposition for the last half dozen cities that have done it. But the long-term gains in terms of foreign trade in particular have been very impressive. So the net benefit, if you take a long enough time horizon, has been positive.
Our guests in this part of Focus 580 are Werner Baer and Joseph Love. Werner Baer is the Le Monde Professor of Economics here at the University of Illinois, a specialist in the economics of Latin America. And Joe Love is now the interim director of the Le Monde Center for Brazilian Studies. He's Emeritus Professor of History here at the University of Illinois. We're talking about Brazil, and questions are welcome. 333-9455 and a toll-free 800-222-9455. Certainly today, Brazil is a very a stable and booming economy. There was a time, maybe not all that long ago, when certainly they had serious problems with inflation, and seemed that the economy had some fairly serious ups and downs, and that as a result of government policy has been smoothed out. They certainly have some advantages because they're heavily involved in biofuels, but they do have a diversified economy. I think that the current president, Mr. Lula da Silva, gets a lot of the credit, although I think some people also would say that the previous president, Mr. Cardoso, certainly deserves some credit. What sorts of things in terms of specific government policy that has to do with economics has Brazil done, do you think, that's actually been positive and helped to make them give them the place in the world economy that they have now?
Well, even in the bad old days when you had high rates of inflation, there was a substantial effort to industrialize the country, not necessarily the most efficient way, but that has to be taken into account. The steel industry, the automobile industry, they were installed in the 1950s, 1960s, when the economic policies from the point of view of fiscal and monetary policies were not the best. But still, what is interesting is that when we get to the 1990s, when Brazil was suffering from very high rates of inflation, up to 4,000% a year in the early 1990s, when Fernando Henrique Cardoso was elected president, he got a group of very competent economists together who instituted a program that brought inflation down. And also, a substantial effort was made to balance the books for the government books. In other words, to have the budget balanced. Since that time, the government has been very responsible in keeping its budget under control. If there were deficits, it borrowed money, but that debt has been whittled down with the substantial surpluses in its balance of trade. With responsible government, especially the fact that the labor leader was not an extreme left-winger, but rather had a very conservative team managing the economy, substantial investments were made by multinationals. A huge influx of capital has taken place. And also in terms of monetary management, interest rates are fairly high compared to other countries, but that keeps the inflation in check. I mean, the inflation is way down. It's about 4% a year. And what is, let me just mention that the Central Bank of Brazil has been of extreme importance in continuing those policies. And two of the directors, one left last year, but two of the directors of the Central Bank have been graduates of the University of Illinois.
Mm. You want to add?
No, that's...
Well, let me ask you a different question. And again, this goes back to some of the things that the president said. When he was first inaugurated, perhaps this was when he was going into his second term. In any case, and you made the point that this was a man who had come out of the working class and has a very strong identification with, and I'm sure a very strong support among less well-off Brazilians, that he really made a very strong commitment, as a nation, to improve the lives of everyone, particularly the most disadvantaged people in Brazil. How well has he and the country done in fulfilling that promise?
I'll start and Werner can finish on this. It seems to me that he has made substantial progress. And this year, Werner and I edited a book called Brazil Under Lula, which deals with the first 4 years of Lula's government and the advances made in the issue of diminishing inequality. And there have been some significant advances, and they are in this second year of the second term. This has continued, although the recession has probably diminished it a little bit, but the data are not in yet. But so the answer is there has been some substantial progress, and the Bolsa Família is just one of a series of measures to give the most poverty-stricken opportunities to rise out of that poverty. So the New York Times 6 months ago had an article on the new middle class in Brazil and how indeed people are rising from the lower classes to the middle class as a result of the longer-term gains. And I don't think it's all attributable to Lula, but to the last eight or dozen years.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think for the neophyte who comes to Brazil for the first time, you will see a lot of poverty still today. You still have the favelas in various Brazilian cities, and the public services. I mean, there is free medical care for everyone, but the medical care is very precarious. So many things still have to be improved. But as Joe has said, on the whole, the lowest of the low in terms of income, their lot has improved in the last few years.
Well, let's talk with some people who are listening here. Let's go first to Belgium, and that's line four. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering, and this may be out of the scope of your program here, but you are economists, so maybe you can answer it. Brazil produces a lot of natural resources, very large producer of steel, as a matter of fact, a lot of paper goods. They produce lots and lots of things. And since it's such a booming economy, right along with China and India, what would be wrong with the fact that maybe we should start pricing things in the world with their currencies instead of just the U.S. dollar?
That's a very good question. I think that ought to be seriously thought about. I don't think that the Brazilian real, that's the currency, the real, is ready to be a reserve currency, but maybe a basket of some of the main currencies or the main trading nations in the world might be a useful thing. In other words, including the Chinese yuan, the euro, the yen, and the dollar. This is something that economists and policymakers are talking about. How soon this will occur, I don't know.
Thank you very much.
All right. And to another caller here, Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I actually had one point about it was noticeable that of the BRIC countries, Brazil wasn't mentioned in this rumor that went out about the so-called buying oil in the basket of currencies that involved Russia, China, India, I think, and the Gulf states. So I was just curious. I guess they might be more dollarized than they'd like to be and maybe don't see that as a good prospect in the long run. About the Olympics, I only heard it once that Brazil actually put up $12 billion of state money as opposed to the $5 billion of private funds that Chicago had offered. So besides the fact that there's never been a Olympics in Latin America before, which is pretty shocking, actually.
There has been one in Mexico.
In South America. Yes, in South America, there, because there was one in Mexico City. But
when there was a massive slaughter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask about the U.S. and Brazil. There was some business news just recently saying that the U.S. and Brazil had resolved to push forward on the Doha deal. This is the WTO deal. The irony I find in this is that while everybody's talking about regulating corporations and some kind of check on them, the Doha WTO agreements actually sort of institutionalize and the move against regulating corporations. So it seems to me that the G20 protestations to the contrary, that when they came out and endorsed the Doha round, and I believe the Brazil-U.S. talks, EU talks, came out were before the G20. So it just seems to me that, you know, I don't know where people sit on free trade. Obviously, the commodities that were just referred to, I mean, it's clear that cotton, orange juice, sugar, everything is pretty much fixed against the Brazilians, it seems to me, in international trading. And they would want a remedy, but a remedy that involves the current iteration of Doha is the dead hand of some bureaucrats from some years ago who aren't actually waking up that their view of the stability of free markets is ludicrous and lampoonable at this point.
Let me say your first question about BRICS and the Brazil is hardly mentioned in terms of new basket of currency. Still, with all its success, the participation of Brazil, share of Brazil in world trade is still relatively small, at most 2%, probably less than 2% of world exports, let's say. So I doubt very much that there would be consideration, at least in the short run, of if there'll be a basket of currencies that the Brazilian real would be included.
That actually is a bit in the weeds. I was just talking about the move away from the dollar more than the move toward the real.
Yeah. Now, the one thing about Brazil, in contrast to Mexico, you know, 80% of Mexico's exports go to the U.S., so they're very much dependent on what happens in the United States, not Brazil. Less than 20% of Brazil's exports go to the United States. About 20% or more go to the European Union. Huge amount goes to Asia now, especially of the primary commodities. They're huge exporters of iron ore, of soybeans, of frozen chicken, of orange juice, and so on. So there's a tremendous diversification, both in terms of products that are being exported and diversification, geographic diversification of Brazil's international trade. Now, let me say just one other thing. Both the Brazilians and the rest of the Latin Americans, in the last 10 years, they've buckled under. They've decreased substantially barriers to imports. And they complain is that the sanctimonious Europeans and Americans who preach free trade don't practice it. They preach it and they want to make sure that the developing countries reduce their barriers to international trade. And they really say, look, what you're saying is do as we say, don't do as we do. And certainly that's how many Brazilians feel about it. Look at their ethanol. The ethanol production in Brazil is much cheaper, and yet we have substantial tariffs because we want to protect the corn producers against imports of ethanol.
I wanted to just add that Brazil, for many years, has had an independent foreign policy that includes independent economic policy, and Brazil has been the leader in Latin America of opposing the proposal of the United States, the Free Trade Association of the Americas, and Brazil has defended Mercosul and a new organization of South American states, in other words, forming a new regional trade association in opposition to what the United States wants to do, a single hemispheric trade association.
Yeah.
Well, we're a bit past the midpoint here. I want to thank the caller and sort of invite some other folks. If you want to get into the conversation here, that certainly would be welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And our guests are Joseph Love. He's the interim director of the Le Monde Center for Brazilian Studies here at the University of Illinois, professor emeritus of history. And also with us is Werner Baer. He is the Le Monde professor of economics here at the U of I. And we're talking about Brazil. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. Just one further question. You know, we've talked about this designation of the BRIC countries, the initials BRIC standing for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and that those were picked out as particularly significant emerging economies in the world. It seems, and from some things that I have read, there was some suggestion that while it's certainly appropriate that Brazil be in among those four, that there's some significant differences between Brazil and those other countries. Is there something to that, or is it perfectly natural that Brazil should be included in this same grouping along with these other much larger, more powerful militarily, maybe more powerful economically, these other countries, Russia, India, China?
Could I just say that you're right about the relative size of the population and the economy. China bulks so large in this group of countries. But I think Brazil's population is now above that of Russia. And in several years in the late 80s and 90s, Brazil's economy was larger than Russia's. So I think Brazil is coming up rapidly in that regard.
Yeah. And it is also in terms of, I think, resources which haven't been used yet. I think Brazil is in a much better situation maybe than especially China and India. Russia still has huge resources which have been unexplored. Let me also mention with Brazil, for example, Brazil used to, about 30 years ago, 80% of its oil was imported. Now it's almost self-sufficient. It is the leader in the production of ethanol, and almost the entire fleet of Brazil's cars are based on ethanol. Not just a 10-20% addition, but they have the flex fuel cars are basically what's being produced today in Brazil. But in addition to this, recently huge discoveries have been made offshore. Now they are very, very deep. But it is expected that maybe within 5 or 7 years, Brazil might become one of the leading exporters of petroleum. Maybe by that time, hopefully, petroleum will be not as important a source of energy as it is today.
Well, I was interested to learn, as you said a little earlier, because I would have thought that probably the strength of the Brazilian economy was in commodities. It was natural resources and in agricultural commodities, and certainly those are very important. You talked about the fact that, for example, the aviation industry is very big in Brazil, both commercial and military, although maybe primarily commercial. Do you think Brazil be as successful now economically as it is had not they made the decision really to go big into biofuels and then now the place we are now, biofuels are very significant. If it wasn't for that, would Brazil be doing as well?
Oh, I think it would, yes. Besides the biofuels, it has many other resources. As I just mentioned, I mean, Brazil has tremendous reserve of entrepreneurship. When we had, way back, I don't know how many years ago, there was a freeze for 2 or 3 years in a row in Florida, which hit the orange production. Brazilian entrepreneurs stepped in and developed Brazil very rapidly out of nowhere into the major exporter in the world of orange juice. The same thing, frozen chicken. A market developed in the Middle East, and they jumped in. So there's a tremendous reserve of entrepreneurship that I found in Brazil. You know, much of Brazil, especially central and south Brazil, resembles the United States. It was a country which was almost empty when it was settled. And in the late 19th century, early 20th century, there was a huge immigration of Italians, of Germans. So it is an immigrants' country, much more so than many other countries of Latin America.
And you didn't mention, we haven't mentioned today, the soybean exports, which are the leading Brazil's the leader in the world in soybean exports. So... in these two ways with regard to bioenergy and soybean exports. Brazil is a competitor to Illinois.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with someone else. We have a caller here in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to hear about this program and the wonderful legacy that's been given. My name is Louise Allen, and I am the widow of the man who brought Portuguese studies to the University of Illinois for the first time in 1940. And you might be interested to know, I do know Professor Love slightly, but he probably doesn't remember me. My husband has been gone for several years. His name was Joseph H.D. Allen. One of the first things that was of interest to professors in the School of Agriculture here when Joe arrived was that he could help them with the standard book on chicken diseases at that time had been written by a Brazilian veterinarian, and so he formed a little evening class for the professors and taught them to read some basic Portuguese, and then after that he was asked to begin a formal program in Portuguese studies through the Department of Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese was added at that time. So I thought you might like a little history. And obviously the reason that Brazil got into biofuels to begin with was sugar, but now they grow almost as much corn as we do, I think. So thanks so much, and I will look forward to hearing more about this wonderful development, and I know my husband would be thrilled.
All right.
Yes, I'm sorry he's not here to witness this, and indeed I did know him. I met you on some occasions, and I remember his important role in the development of the Portuguese language studies and therefore the larger Brazilian studies. Let me say that the University of Illinois has been interested in Brazil a long time, and the first person, though, at the time, he wasn't yet part of the University of Illinois, was Eugene Davenport, who went to Brazil on a agricultural mission in 1892. And he is the person for whom Davenport Hall is named and Davenport House at the University of Illinois. This year marks the 100th year of the teaching of Latin American history at the University of Illinois. So our interest has been long-term. And Brazil has been, of course, added in more recent years. My own teaching of Brazilian history began in 1966, and it's still continuing because we have a professor of Brazilian history here now, Ann Schneider. So we've been keeping up, and now we're going to greatly expand a long tradition of interest in Latin America and Brazil in particular.
Yeah. We're coming into the point here where we have about maybe 15 minutes, and I do want to give you the opportunity perhaps, to, if you would like, to talk a little bit more about what will be happening on the campus next week. At the beginning, if folks were listening, you talked a little bit about the fact that the university had received this very significant gift to infuse a lot of money into Brazilian studies here at the university. So that's for culture, that's for language, that's for economics, it's for what's going on here. It's so that you can bring students here, it's so you can take students there. So I know that you'll be doing a lot of different things, and that the inaugural event of the institute will be taking place next week. Do you want to just take a couple minutes and talk about what's going on?
Yeah, sure. We're going to celebrate this in 2 days, on Wednesday, the 14th and the 15th. Wednesday, the São Paulo Symphony Orchestra will perform in Cranard. It's part of the Marquee series, and it was just a lucky coincidence, not totally a coincidence, that they're going to be performing the night before the inauguration of the center.
So we've integrated that into our program.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And the next day, we're going to have, for that event, we have quite a number of prominent Brazilians who are coming. First, the donor is coming with his family. Then we're going to have a very prominent senator from Brazil, Jere Sati is his name, who was governor three times of a state in northeast Brazil, very successful governor and a very influential senator. He will be coming. The governor of the state of Rio Grande do Sul, which is the southernmost state, she will be coming. Also, a federal deputy from the state, northeastern state of Pernambuco, will be present. And one of the directors of the central bank, who's a U of I graduate, will be present. In addition to this, a number of the colleagues which Lehman mentored will be present. For example, there's the president of Ambev, which is a huge beer complex, which he has a controlling interest in Brazil and spilling over into Argentina and other countries. And then there is the merger that had occurred between Ambev and the Interbrew of Belgium occurred a few years ago. People thought the Belgians are taking over the Brazilians, but it's exactly the other way around. It's the Belgians, it's Le Mans people who are running InBev, and it was InBev, which a little over a year ago bought out Anheuser-Busch. So now the CEO of Anheuser-Busch also will be present at that inauguration. So we'll have lots of important political figures and economic leaders who will be present, and there might be some people from local, from our corporations in central Illinois, such as ADM and Caterpillar, which have vast investments in Brazil, who also might be there. So they will all be there on especially for the event of Thursday, the 15th in the afternoon. We're going to have a roundtable discussion in the NCSA building on 1205 West Clark Street in the auditorium.
That's the National Center for Supercomputer Applications.
Yeah. There will be a roundtable in which these Brazilian guests will debate. The topic will be called Brazil in 21st Century.
Brazil rising status in the 21st century.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then at 5 o'clock, there'll be the formal inauguration of the center led by Chancellor Herman and with the presence of Mr. Lehman.
Yeah. And if people want to attend this roundtable discussion, is this
everyone's welcome.
Open
yeah,
to
yeah.
the
It's open
right.
to the public, and at the end there'll be a reception, in that same center. Yeah.
So the roundtable begins at 3 p.m. on Thursday the 15th, and we'll go to approximately 4:30, and then there will be a reception and formal inauguration of the event following that about 5:30.
Very good. Well, we have another caller here. I want to make sure we get them in while we still have some time. This is somewhat in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you? Mm-hmm. Nice to hear your discussion. I noticed that nothing was mentioned about the destruction of the rainforest. I don't know whether economists think about that or not, but there's a recent report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that talks about climate models in that area where rain stops, basically quits, because the destruction, which is continuing as we speak, and interestingly, the government every 4 years, whoever runs the show down there, always has to think, well, we're going to change that. We're going to, you know, pay people to stop doing this, or we're going to reassign them areas or whatever. You know, but it keeps happening. If you go to Google Earth, you can see historical maps of the destruction. And but it's interesting that this conversation about Brazil, which Brazil is probably what, 2/3 or half, 50% rainforest by now, that nothing was mentioned about it. It's like it doesn't exist in, you know, 20 years. I've been following this for about since the late 70s.
Well, in fact, that's an excellent point, and I did indeed have a point here on my list of questions that certainly there are a lot of people would say that Brazil has a very important role to play in dealing with global climate change. Well, I appreciate the question.
Yeah, they call it the lungs of the planet.
We'll get some response here, yeah.
I think in the first place it ought to be acknowledged indeed that this government, like the previous governments, has not done a sufficient job to retard and end and even reverse the destruction of the rainforest. Marina Silva, who was the Minister of the Environment, recently resigned because of her dissatisfaction with the Lula government on that point. One of the problems is the relative weakness of the central government thousands of miles away from Brasilia in the Amazon Valley, and the invasion of peasants and ranchers to clear land and push the Indians into an ever narrower reserve. So you're right. And in many ways, this is a world problem, an international problem. But Brazil has sovereignty over this area, and it's incumbent on Brazil to do more to stop it.
Well, let me say that there's a goodwill. I mean, Brazil wants to control the rainforest. But the problem, as you said, is how do you do it? I mean, how can you keep individuals from invading, from logging, when you don't have enough manpower to control it. And this is, these are huge areas. But the goodwill is there. But let me just say something else. When you say this is the lungs of the world, Brazilians are very sensitive to this. They will first of all say, now you're preaching to us, but what did you North Americans do? You destroyed your forests too. And who are you to tell us what to do on our sovereign territory? So there's a lot of nationalism involved. I'm not trying to condone it. I'm saying you have to look at the other side. But also, let me say, not all Brazil is a rainforest. A huge area of Brazil is a highland plateau. So the idea of that Brazil is basically a few cities and a jungle is just unrealistic. That's not Brazil.
We talked a little bit earlier, one or both of you talked about the amount of trade between Brazil and the United States and it being relatively small, although I don't know if you can – I'm sure we're talking about big numbers. The thing that I'm just interested in here particularly is who are Brazil's most significant trading partners and how does the countries of Asia, China particularly, figure in that?
Well, China has been growing substantially, especially with the export of iron ore and soybeans, basically a primary product. Mm-hmm. There have been some investments. For example, the Embraer, which is the airplane producers, made some deals with the Chinese of assembling some of their planes in China. Now, again, with Asia, it's been growing, but still the largest market for Brazil has been Europe, the European Union. There's been substantial growth in trade with other Latin American countries, but only about 10 years ago, only about 10% of Brazil's exports went to other Latin American countries. And that has grown substantially, but it's not past the 20% mark. So as I mentioned before, it's well diversified, its trade. One other thing which you haven't mentioned is the growth of Brazilian multinationals. They are private steel companies who are very prominent who've bought up U.S. steel companies. There are a number of Brazilian firms that are buying up, setting up subsidiaries or buying up firms in Europe and the United States and to a certain extent in Asia. And that is something that's been not very well known but is developing very rapidly.
From the point of view of other Latin American countries, they're beginning to talk about Brazilian imperialism. And the most obvious case is Paraguay, where Brazil really controls the local economy there.
One more caller, at least in the time we have left, someone in Savoy. This is line one. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. I do not know whether the Brazilians are claiming that we destroyed our forest. I think someone gave some reference to that. But I do want to call everyone's attention to the fact that Vanity Fair has an outstanding article, I think it might be August of 2009, several pages describing how that dastardly Republican President Theodore Roosevelt managed to save huge tracts of our forest. And they give him credit for almost single-handedly seeing to it that he got enough people to agree to have it done. And there's a lot in there about John Muir and John Burroughs, who were two different major naturalists who were in favor of many of these things as well. And apparently they and Teddy got along splendidly. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, fine.
I don't know why the Republicans of Roosevelt's age would be called dastardly, but he was indeed a very progressive president, and we owe to him the creation of our national park system.
It's my understanding now that the economy of Brazil is either – is it the ninth or tenth biggest?
Varies from year to year.
I suppose it depends, on the year.
It depends
and perhaps
the exchange rates too, yeah.
So I'm interested in – you talked about the fact that you're going to have roundtable discussion essentially talking about the future, the potential, what that is. What do you think that the potential for growth is for – Brazil, and say we're here now at the beginning of the 21st century. If we could look ahead to near to the end, where do you think Brazil will be?
Well, I think the potential is enormous. Let me also say, Brazil has grown rapidly under the Lula administration for just about 3 years. It was about 5% a year, 5 to 6% a year, which is nothing compared to China, which has been growing over two digits for over a long period of time. So it's been impressive, but not as spectacular as China. The growth potential is substantial. The substantial amount of resources, natural resources, haven't really been developed, been tapped yet. Tremendous progress has been made in agribusiness. Agricultural production from being artisan-like has been very professionalized, you might say. Certainly the productivity of major industrial corporation in Brazil have improved substantially. I think that Brazil is going to benefit by huge investments from the United States and Europe and Japan in the future. I mean, huge amount of capital has been moving in. So I think the potential of growing at 5 or 6% a year for a long period of time is certainly there.
Hmm. When you compare this to the rest of Latin America, Brazil really looks good, with the single exception of Chile, which is a very small economy compared to the others. But Argentina very recently had to basically confiscate the national pension fund to service the foreign debt, and Mexico was caught in the grips of the paralysis of the struggle against organized crime. There's really a parallel government there now. So Brazil, of the three major countries, Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, is moving ahead far better than the others.
Certainly Brazil has great economic power and economic potential, and that's something that we should expect to increase. Is there some way, do you think, that culturally that there is potential for Brazil to be, let us say, more influential, maybe have a higher profile, particularly here in the United States?
Well, certainly in music, Brazil has always been a tremendous source of inspiration. I mean, it was the samba, the bossa nova, even in classical music, like Villa Lobos.
Could I say just on another front that, depending on what you mean by culture, but one of the most influential Brazilians of the 20th century was Paulo Freire, who developed so-called pedagogy of the oppressed to raise the level of social consciousness while teaching people literacy, found this to be tremendously important in making people want to learn to read to defend their own interests.
Hmm. Well, we're at the point where we're going to have to finish up here and to thank our guests, Werner Baer. He's an economist here at the U of I, and Joe Love. He's emeritus professor of history. Werner Baer is also the Lehman Professor of Economics. And Joe is now the interim director of the Lehman Center for Brazilian Studies at the U of I. The very first event, the inaugural event for the series, for the center.
The Institute.
The Institute, pardon me. I know there's an important difference. But the Institute is taking place next week. And again, you want to mention just the roundtable discussion.
Yes, Thursday at 3 o'clock in the National Center for Supercomputers Applications.
The auditorium. But that's there.
And anybody who would like to stop by should feel welcome. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
We'll also mention that a little bit later, coming up today here on AM 580 as part of the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn will be talking with Catherine Russell Rich. She was at a turning point in her life. She was a longtime magazine editor. She was out of a job and not so sure what she would do next, and so she accepted an assignment from the New York Times and was on her way to India, where she decided that she had to learn Hindi. Coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste talks with Rich about the transformative power of language. She's the author of the book Dreaming in Hindi, Coming Awake in Another Language, and you can hear that in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today. Our show, Focus 580, supported in part by Bodywork Associates. It's offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Now with 4 area locations, including inside the new Activities and Recreation Center north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus. More information at bodyworkassociates.com. Support also comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the series collector to the first-time buyer. Tastings held every Saturday, wine tastings from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. We're going to break for an update on the market. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're at the Chicago Board of Trade. Soybeans have made a double-digit run-up today, busting through both the 250-day moving average and making an assault on the 100-day new moving average up at 975.5, as well as the high that was set back on the 15th of September. that being at 977.75. And good buying on the day as the RSI has turned upward, showing 48.49. Let's look at the particulars in the pit at the moment. November beans, 9.